Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to The Moon Underwater. This is part two of Dan Snow's travails and traversations through the mind of his own dream pub.
But before we left, we'd been set five questions by Robin Allender, and Dan Snow had said, I will get 100%.
I love the confidence.
So maybe it's up to Dan to give us the answers.
Sure. Well, let's see. I'll go to John first for each of these then. So John, 1520, what are you saying?
I think it's the one before Henry VIII, but I've gone Henry VIII.
Well done.
Yes, Dan's confidently marking, and it is Henry VIII, who was 1509 to, do you know his numbers? Dan?
No, 47.
Very close. Very good. 1553, John. It was action-packed.
Elizabeth I.
No. Dan?
No, her big sister took over in 1553. Didn't she? Mary the First.
Yeah, there was actually three on the throne in that year.
Yeah, you get Lady Jane Grey and you get Edward VI.
Brilliant.
As well, her younger brother.
Full house.
So could we have had any of those?
Well, I wanted all, if poss.
I mean, let's get into it. I mean, I think Lady Jane Grey would have been a controversial answer.
Sure. She's on the Wikipedia page, so not sure.
She's listed as a monarch, is she? Yeah.
Oh, no, I think there might be a subheading controversy, so, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'd get... Listen, in a pub, you'd get... If you put that down, you'd get the point.
Edward VI named Lady Grange, or Shady Lane, if you're a Pavement fan, as his heir in his will, overruling the order of succession laid down by Parliament in the Third Succession Act. 4 days after his death, on the 6th of July, Jane was proclaimed queen, the first of three Tudor women to be proclaimed queen. 9 days after the proclamation, the Privy Council switched allegiance and proclaimed Edward VI's Catholic half-sister Mary queen, and Jane was executed for treason. God, what a shit business.
Harsh.
Yeah, extremely.
Rob, you did your first ever unintentional spoonerism then.
What did I say?
You said Lady Grange J.
I was trying to say Shady Lane Grey, like the pavement, but it didn't really go very well. Anyway, let's move on. 1650, John, what are you saying?
I've gone Charles I, but that's a load of rubbish.
Okay, Dan, do you want to jump in?
Well, it's a bit... It's a sort of trick question, this, right?
Yes.
in that it was sort of nobody. It was,
yes.
Oliver Cromwell.
Yeah, interregnum years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Hate trick questions.
I mean, you've chosen really hard years.
I know, they are basically quite hard years. But I was watching Only Connect and I thought, oh, that's good. 1835, John.
I've gone Edward VII.
William, sorry.
William.
Edward VII. Crikey.
No, I've got a mistake. I've got my coins mixed up.
It's the least famous modern king.
I've never even heard of
William IV.
William IV.
Sailor Bill.
Right.
He has some of the nicest coins.
I bet he does.
Yeah. Some of the nicest coins.
No, his farthings have got some beautiful patinas and they're quite affordable.
This is first class content. John, What about 1936? Try and do... So there's more than one, if you can do...
Well, if we're talking coins, this is the ultimate king of coins. It's Edward VIII.
And who else would have been monarch in that year?
George the Sixth?
Yeah, after. And...
Oh, I don't know the third.
No. So, yeah, you were right, yeah. Dan, do you want to...
You're right. It's George the Fifth. You're almost right. Yeah. George V... Edward VIII, George
VI.
Mm. Because Edward VIII's coins were minted, but they were never in circulation. So his Thruppenny bits.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Oh, his Thruppenny bits. If I could have my hands on an Edward VIII Thruppenny bit or a 1933 penny, the rarest penny. This was a cracking age for rare coins.
Yeah, sure. God. A lot going on in the 30s, wasn't there? You know, not least in coins. But yeah, very good, Dan. You did get 100%. That was quite extraordinary.
Well, do you know what though? You asked the one area in which I've spent 20 years learning this crap.
That was great. Did he ever have one of those wooden rulers at school with all the rulers?
Of course I did. Yeah. Of course I did. Yeah, the wooden ruler. Yeah.
The ruler of rulers.
Brilliant. Great. That was a good quiz. Thank you.
First class knowledge and insight there from Dan. But Dan, we move back to your pub, which has got crumbling beams and it's dark as hell and old as time. It's very mystical. It's like a pit into the past, with a little bit of World War II graffiti knocking around from those Toms and Jerrys. But what spirits haunt this pub? What two spirits are you going to have?
I mean, I just don't drink many. I mean, well, I say that. I do. I love a gin. I'll take, and nowadays it's a gin. Every postcode has got its own gin distillery. So I'll take a gin, and I'll take an Isle of Wight gin because it's across from me and it's delicious. Mix it up with a little Fever Tree, and then it's got to be a whiskey. It's got to be a Scotch. It's got to be a Glenmorangie Portwood finish, I think.
Ooh.
When I was a kid, I worked in Canada and I was 18, 19, 20. I cleaned toilets and chambermaids in a lodge in the mountains in Canada. And the owner of the lodge, his project was to make me like whiskey. And you know, when you're young, you don't really like whiskey. And so he just would give me a little sip every night. And, you know, that sort of lovely paternalist, in that lovely paternalistic way, got me addicted to whiskey. So great. Yeah. And it was always Glenmorangie Portwood finish. So they pour the Glenmorangie into a barrel that once contained port. And I haven't looked back ever since, really. So yeah, at the end of the night, I like to try and have a couple of them just to really ruin my sleep patterns and send me, you know, absolutely torched the following day.
Yeah, it's so weird, that nightcap idea, isn't it? It's like, you know, let's give myself heartburn and terrible dreams and a big hangover in the morning. But, you know, I love it.
Heartburn and Terrible Dreams would be a good name for a
pub.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm.
You've got your Isle of Wight gin, you've got your Glenmorangie Portwood Cask Edition.
Mm. Sounds fantastic.
We're going to need something for you to read in this dream pub of the mind. So we head on over to the pub library for Robin to add this week's publy tome.
Thanks, John. Every week I add a new book into the pub library. And appropriately enough, it is a historical book this time. And it is Dublin, Pub Life and Law, An Oral History by Kevin C. Kearns, which is a book John actually got and gave to me. But it is absolutely brilliant because it is a social history. And as you said at the start, it covers so much of that kind of exchange of ideas and of the value and community value of pubs in Dublin. Before I read the extract, which is a brilliant extract, on the previous monthly episode, I mentioned a pub in Dublin called the Cobblestone, which I'd very much like to visit, which is a fantastic venue for folk music in Dublin, and that's actually under threat of closure because people have wanted to turn it into a block of flats or whatever it is. So there is a petition out there. I'm not sure when this podcast will go out, but do Google the Cobblestone petition to try and keep that going. Anyway, so this is from Dublin Pub Life and Law, and the chapter heading is called The Pintman and His Pint. The Pintman is one of Dublin's great legendary figures. His origins are as deep as those of the drinking house itself. It has been theorised that great pintmen are born, not made, a sort of gift of the genes. Famous pintmen are a part of every pub's folklore. They are esteemed by pubmates as the expert pint drinkers, set apart from the plebeians by their discerning... plebeians? How do you say that word?
Plebeian, yes.
Yeah, plebeian.
Keep going.
Sure. Set apart from the plebeians by their discerning manner and technique. To Tom Corkery, bona fide pint men are a special breed distinguishable by their cerebral approach to the pint. The true pintman knows that the pint is to be contemplated as well as to be drunk. He does not even need to be in company, for his pint is his company. If you study the good pintman in a pub, you will observe how he can stand. No pucker pintman ever sits, staring into his glass for long periods, thinking deep thoughts. This is because he knows that truth lies at the bottom of his glass. It is rewarding to the body, soothing to the soul, and leads one into long, pleasant, and philosophic conversations. This, then, is pintmanship in the true sense.
What an incredible passage there.
Need, I would love to share that if you could post that in a written form.
Sure, yeah, I will do, yeah. It's it's a really, really great book. I'm sorry for laughing, it's almost just that... I mean, it's almost too good.
It's almost too good. It is almost too good. I heard a story once that Cork was made sort of European city of culture. And usually European city of culture, after Empire of Liverpool a few years ago or whatever, they sort of just chuck vast amounts of money at it and just put like big sort of things, signs everywhere. And apparently, the story I was told when I was in Cork, but in a pub, so it's probably not true. So I was told was that Cork did nothing, didn't change a thing.
Yeah, great, yeah.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Come to Cork. Walk down the street, go into a pub, there'll be someone playing a fiddle, someone chatting about poetry, someone doing a little acting in the corner, you'll have a nice time, go home. I just loved it. I love that. It's a great concept, yeah.
I don't know if you've read that specific book, Dan, but it's also fantastic on the sort of the history of the pub that wasn't a pub. And because so many, as you were talking about that place in Wales, so many homes essentially sort of doubled as shebeens or kips. And there was a point in Dublin's history where one in four dwellings sold alcohol of some description. But also about the history of gender and the pub and sort of when women weren't and were allowed in pubs and sort of how there was this sort of strange unwritten rule that old women were allowed in pubs because they had sort of lost their womanliness, and girls were allowed in to get to sort of take away porters and stouts to take back to the women who were working in the houses. It's very interesting. I mean, an awful time to have been a woman, an awful time to have been anyone in some respects, but a very difficult and hard life. But the pub was sort of had played a part in all these elements of that very difficult life in sort of late Victorian, early 19th century Ireland. But a great addition to the pub library, Robin. We also here, Dan, don't just have a pub library, but we have a pub jukebox. Given that you're probably listening to music from 11th century to present day, are you listening to sort of...
I actually am not a big musicologist. I wish I was. But can I say one thing on the book quickly, which is so nice to have a book in a pub, and we all need to reinforce the positive stereotype of a man sitting alone in a pub with a pint reading a book. And I've tried to do it more recently when I'm away working. I don't want to be on my phone. Go to the pub and read, and just have that confidence and that. And my dad got very ill a few years ago, and I'd go and see him in the hospital every day. And on the way home, because I lived with housemates, I was in my 20s, and I had a sort of madhouse for the, you know, fellow bachelors. And every day on the way back from hospital, I would go to the pub and I'd read and have a pint. And I got into this routine to sort of move from the hospital space to back to my sort of normal life. And it was the most therapeutic and amazing thing I've ever done. Since that day, I've always tried to just not be embarrassed if I'm alone in a pub or reading in public. You know, just go there, get a pint, pull up a book and just kick back. And it's a very, very special thing.
A sort of almost like a decompression moment.
Totally.
And it also should, you know, it's unfortunately more difficult for women to do that, but it should be encouraged. You know, we read out a great tweet from a friend, Kate, who said she's just found the confidence to do that, to go and drink in a pub on her own, you know. And
yeah, I very rarely. You're absolutely right. In my immediate experience, it's my wife absolutely loves pubs, spend more time than I do, and my older sister is a pub hound as well.
Right,
so,
yeah.
My sort of. But of course that's right, and that's really important.
I think also a crossword is a good thing to take to a pub, because for pint one or two, it's not as involving as a book necessarily. You can sort of look away from it. You can think, let your mind wander. But until you're too far gone, that it's quite a nice sight, someone doing a crossword in a sunlit booth by a big window. So, but we do have a jukebox, sadly going to ruin your experience if you're there drinking a pint and reading a book, unless it's the perfect album to have on in a pub. What would you add to the Moon Underwater jukebox?
You know, a pub can be a place of contemplation. It can be a place of riot. It can be a place of recovery, right? So it's very hard with music. Some nights I'm not even averse to little dance music if that's what's the vibe. But really, it's not that often in a proper pub you're going to get that. So I think I'm going to hark back to my formative years, which is the 90s, which I was in a lot of pubs. And then it was like a precursor to going out. It was a very social thing, high energy pubs. And I've got to say, it had to be Oasis. It would have to be.
I knew this was leading to Oasis. You teed it up with
I'm a sort of 1990s rugger bugger who just listens to Oasis. So I'm sort of comfortable with that now. But yeah, definitely maybe. I think I would have that. And you hear that come on the pub and you just think, this is. And they love going to pubs, right? The Gallagher brothers loved being in the pub. There's a purity to it.
Well, there's an interesting fact about Be Here Now, which is, I don't know if you know about like the loudness wars with music, where kind of over time music has been mastered that much more louder and it's kind of becoming more squashed and compressed and everything. And Be Here Now was kind of one of the first things that was just so loud. And it was basically mastered so that it could be heard in a busy pub. Which is
so. I'm one of the few people on earth who loves Be Here Now.
Really,
and I remember, yeah, I love it. And everyone goes, oh, they were full of cocaine. I'm like, what? I don't know what you're on about. They were full of everything the whole goddamn time. And
it's got its moments. It's got its moments.
Stand by me. I don't. Yeah, listen. We're in the pub. We're able to share these things, and I'm going to share that. I like Be Here Now.
Well, is that going to be in your jukebox, or is it going to?
No.
God, no.
God, no.
What were you saying? Definitely maybe or Morning Glory?
Yeah, definitely maybe.
Definitely maybe, yes.
Yeah, definitely maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Slide Away. When you hear Slide Away, when I hear Slide Away in a pub now, I weep. I weep. My daughter's like over the spilt lemonade and the sort of fish and chips on a Sunday afternoon. She's like, Daddy, why are you crying? I'm like, it's nothing. It's just...
Dan Snow admits to crying at Oasis and hates Stonehenge. Are the headlines.
Hang on, hang on.
Dan, one of the producers of this podcast has the lyrics to Slide Away embroidered under the collar of his wedding suit.
Right, okay, there you go.
There you go. He's also got a tattoo of a bee to represent Manchester.
Oh, I thought that would be Napoleon Bonaparte's claim to the throne of France.
Maybe I don't really want to know how your garden grows, 'cause I just want to fly lately. The pain in the morning rain as it soaks you to the bone. Maybe I just want to fly.
Cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Definitely Maybe is blaring out in this pub as old as time. And it would make an odd contrast for a pub dating back to Roman times to stretch right until the Britpop era. But that's the great thing about pubs.
Well, no. Interestingly, it's the oak. If you use, so there's a door in Westminster Abbey which is about 1,000 years old, and it's made from very mature oak. Which, if you think about it, those oaks could have been saplings when the Romans left Britain. So that the oak in the pub, you're building it 800 years ago, you're using oak, seasoned oak, maybe it's been recycled. It's not inconceivable. When the oak was a living little sapling, it could have been, 400 AD. Not impossible.
Incredible. You love oak, don't you?
Of course, man. Well, most pubs are called the Royal Oak. The Royal Oak's a big pub name, isn't it?
And I bet you can tell us why they're called the Royal Oak.
Yeah, of course I can. Because, as you guys know this, Charles II hid in an oak tree when he was escaping from the Battle of Worcester, when he was defeated by Oliver Cromwell, and he hid in a tree. And it became known as the Royal Oak, and it was this very celebrated story of how Charles II escaped over several weeks and made it to France and ended up coming back, obviously, as king. And the Royal Oak became such a tourist attraction that it was chopped down. The unbelievably stupid landowner chopped the oak down because he was so busy, pissed off with everyone coming over his land. There are oaks around the country now which are what they call when they get a cutting of a tree and stick it in a pot. Anyway, so the Royal Oak's kids are still around, but we lost the Royal Oak only 150 years ago. It's during the Victorian period. Some absolute goon did that. Yeah, I know.
It's amazing the decisions people make with stuff that we now think is a historical artifact. Like, a lot happens with buildings a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And the cobblestone in Dublin, for instance.
And the cobblestone. Yeah. Yeah. But this Royal Oak guy, this farmer, he was worrying about his sheep grazing. Like, he's now, him and his kids will be living on Easy Street for the rest of eternity because you just have the Royal Oak, little car park, serve a whole little brewery, little microbrewery, the original Royal Oak beer, blah, blah, blah. I mean, idiot.
How did it become a pub name, though, from the tree?
Because pubs were, if you think about the Prince of Prussia, you think about the Cumberland, they were drawn, they were very political. They often were drawn from what was going on in the news at the time. And so the Royal Oak would have been this sort of, the Royal Charles, I'm trying to think, the King's Head.
They were the memes of their day. Is that what you're saying?
They were the memes of the day, yeah. And so you'd start a pub and you'd call it the Prince of Prussia is a good one that's gone now. There's at the Alma, there are quite a lot of Crimean War ones. It's fascinating when you see a pub and no one's got a clue where they come from. But they would have been memes. They would have been famous things talked about at the time. And
Hole in the Wall is an interesting one, isn't it? There's quite a few pubs called that.
I wonder where that comes from. I don't. Yeah, you're right. I don't know where that.
I mean, I should
from.
Now. I brought it up. I really should know. But Hole in the Wall in Bristol.
The second brilliant anecdote.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find it in my mind. Name origin. Named after a spy hole that enabled 18th century sailors and smugglers to keep watch for customs men and press gangs. So there you go.
I guess pubs, if they existed in that space between, you wouldn't have to pay a tariff coming into a town. So if you could sort of get a hole in the wall where a pub could be entered from outside without having to come in through the gate, maybe that was good. Maybe that was a sort of funny way. That was a way of avoiding duties, maybe.
So what does, because there's a pub in Bristol Robin and I love called the Alma Tavern. What's that? What's Alma a reference to?
Battle of the Alma. Amazing battle in the Crimean War. Like that's outside Sebastopol in the Crimea. And, again, very popular, very because of news, because the first of Crimean War was the first kind of where there's almost instant news coverage. So very, very memey, as you say, very lots of people talking about it. And they would have replaced earlier pub names. There would have been lots of Waterloos and Wellingtons. The Duke's Head would have been probably quite Wellington-y. You don't get many balaclavas. I wonder why you particularly get Almas. I don't know. It wasn't even a particularly famous battle in the Crimean War, but it's just one of the many. And several pubs called Alma I've been to.
Well, it's interesting to see the pub as almost like the sort of the pub name as like the headline of its time.
and you can sort of track news stories and public events and what was in the public consciousness by what pubs were called.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when you see a Duke of Cambridge, which was probably referring to Queen Victoria's son, I quite like it when, in a way, they modernise it and stick a picture of Prince William on there, because actually that's probably true to the original tradition of naming pubs, that you would have... When the new king came on the throne, you'd call it the Royal Charles or the Charles or something like that. You know, when someone takes over from someone else.
I mean, there was a pub in Bristol, the Victoria, that had the pub sign that had Posh Spice on it at one point. And you know, maybe that's...
Yeah, but I think that's quite cool. Yeah, and now that would change, because I mean, who's ever heard of bloody Posh Spice?
We are one choice away from completing the lineup in your bar. You've so far got Ringwood Brewery 49er, Ringwood Boondoggle 4.9 and 4.2% respectively. They're on draft. In the bottles, you've got Punk IPA 5.6%. And then things get really messy with the Vibrant Forest Stygian Abyss at 11.5%. That really will take you into a Stygian Abyss. You've got Isle of Wight Gin and Glenmorangie Portwood Cask edition. Whilst Oasis blares out, or not necessarily blaring out, it can just play out at a reasonable volume on the jukebox. But what's your final drink choice? This is your wild card.
Well, I could have a cider. I could have if it's a wintry day, I might have a glass of wine, maybe. So I could get a Lebanese red, a Messiah red from the Bekaa Valley.
Ooh,
lovely.
Which I drank a lot when I was in Lebanon.
The wines of Lebanon and memories attached to a drink. So tell me about your time in Lebanon and this specific Lebanese red.
I had a really terrible idea, which was to sort of fit. I'm not an academic historian. I was always very aware of that, and I was always keen to emphasise that. I'm a broadcaster. And I come from a family of journalists, but I love history. I always believed I could fit somewhere in the middle between journalism and history. That's kind of been what I'm attempting to do for my career. No one's sort of noticed, but that's what I've sort of tried to do. And so I had an idea that one area in which people do find history fascinating is when there's a modern place where history is obviously really important, because the modern place is a complete catastrophe, like maybe Haiti or Congo or Syria or Rwanda during the genocide. You know, why are those places locked in war or conflict, genocide? Well, because it's things that have happened in the past. Something's led them to that point, right? And so I had this, and everyone said shut up and ignored it. I tried to go to Afghanistan for the BBC. That was turned down. And just as I had my first kid, I thought, do you know what I want to actually do now is go and look around Welsh castles in a tweed jacket. And just as I had my first kid, he couldn't have made it up. Someone at the BBC went, hey, you know that idea about you going to war zones? That's a great idea. Syrian civil war has just broken out. Go to Syria. And to get to Syria, you had to go via either smuggled in through the north or from Turkey, or you get in through Lebanon and drive up to Damascus that way. So we did some filming in Lebanon with Sunni groups who were recruiting for the rebel groups in Syria just across the border, and we'd go up to the border and we'd knock about there in the Bekaa Valley, and we'd meet scary people and crazy, you know, very, very hardline Salafist preachers who were advocating getting rid of Assad from power in Syria. So we're meeting scary people, doing scary things, going to scary places, and going into Syria and delting out and darting back into Syria. It was my first time in a war zone. And I just remember drinking a lot of Messiah red wine, a lot of red wine when we get back.
And I guess the perfect climate for red wine in that area, but perhaps not as well known outside of the region as it should be. So you're host of the History Hit podcast. Tell us about that and History Hit TV.
Well, I'm very lucky, like you guys, like everyone, looking to, if you're a broadcaster or a writer or a creative person, you want to try and use these digital revolution we've been part of to support yourself, to sustain yourself, to have some agency yourself. So rather than wait to be told where to go by the BBC, or in some cases, waiting for that phone never to ring, you know. I got out and started a podcast. I interview historians, I interview politicians, I interview celebrities, whatever, it's the same as everyone else. But, it's all about history. It's everything that's ever happened to anyone who's ever lived. So it's pretty broad canvas. We go back to ancient Egypt, we go to the Stone Age, we go up to the modern world. We ask Tony Blair why he invaded Iraq and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's going pretty well. I'm very lucky with that, and it's self-sustaining, and I can't believe my luck, in fact. And then I started a video channel off the back of it, in a gigantic act of hubris, which is a subscription channel, so like Netflix, but just a history. We make history documentaries, and it's going well too. So I'm having the time of my life at the moment. Weirdly, I'm very, very lucky, and I'm my own boss, which is the dream.
So are you able in sort of brainstorming meetings to go, Dan, got an idea about the history of Barbadian beaches? That's a great idea, Dan. Let's make it. How much do I need? You need 500k, first class tickets, done, deal. It's going to be a hit.
We are a bit resource constrained. I mean, that's the only thing, John. But I mean, no, I mean, we're less so. And so, yeah, we're looking at next spring. I'm genuinely going to a pub in a week's time. And I'm going to talk with my team and a historian about, shall we go to the South Pacific, to an island, to look at an amazing World War II battlefield. And it's just a tropical island. And that conversation Ooh. Is going to happen. And we have got the budget for that if we want to do it.
Whoa.
So, I can't have to pinch myself. It's going really well.
You're going to get there and they'll like go, actually, Dan, not very much happened here. Shh. This is very significant in the history of the war. Yeah.
Well, do check out History Hit TV and also Dan's podcast, A History Hit, which is everything that's ever happened to anyone who's ever been alive. An incredible remit for a podcast, but that's the freedom that podcasts give you.
You're barred.
Now, Dan, you've described your pub as a place of contemplation, riot and recovery, or you've described the pub as a place of contemplation, riot and recovery. But there must be something you don't want to happen in your pub. So what are you going to bar?
I think you guys know. Surely everyone says this, but I think screens, isn't it? Unfortunately, it's all screens, large and small.
It's a... Oh, that's interesting. Large and small.
Yeah. And I'm the worst offender, but I think if we're going for perfectionists, let's ban screens large and small.
Because it's impossible not to look at a screen, even if you have no interest in the sport it's showing.
Yep.
Hurry up, please. It's time.
Well, we have enjoyed stocking your dream pub of the mind, where it's dark as hell and the mother of all fires illuminates beams blackened with fire and fags, and there's World War II graffiti in this place of contemplation, riot and recovery. But we can't let you go and take it with you until it has a name. So Dan Snow, what are you going to call this incredible pub?
I want it to have a nod to a traditional pub name. Like I think like calling everything like the Cock Womble and Waffle is a bit like it's a bit too ironic for me.
Right.
So I think I want to give it a traditional historic name, a name rooted in history, but one that means other things as well. And therefore, I want to call it The Victory, because going to the pub is a little victory, a little daily victory for us all.
Nice.
And it can have, on the pub sign, it can have HMS Victory, which is the most extraordinary object on planet Earth, Nelson's flagship at Trafalgar, the single most complex man-made object on planet Earth at that time, and still there today to be seen. So it's deeply historic. It connects you with the sea, with history, but also the name. Let's go and have a pint in The Victory.
That's really nice.
It's a great name for a pub, great name for a ship. And we wish you fair sailing with your pub of the mind, The Victory. We now bestow it upon you to keep wherever you may be, whether it's in the South Pacific or in Southampton. And to play you out, I think it's only fitting that we have the song from your album that makes you weep genuine tears. It's Slide Away from Definitely Maybe by Oasis. There he goes. Oh, Dan, fare ye well on that chariot. So splendid. The chariot pulled up about 10 minutes ago and is more than happy to wait for Dan. Obviously puts the meter on. That's fair. And yes, the chariot is now taken off into the night sky with Dan swirling many historical items that he takes with him around the realms. And next week, we're delighted that we are joined by comedian, actor, pubsman numero one, and presenter of another podcast, the Socially Distant Sports Bar. That's right. It's my favourite Welshman, Mike Bubbins, who joins us. So don't miss that episode, which is next up. And a reminder, as always, you can support us. You can give us nourishment and succour by heading to patreon.com/moonunderpod for very many bonus items. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.